This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, this is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, the kerfuffle around community gardens.
So this has its roots in Kebun Kebun Bangsa. First, we're going to look at what the law says about spaces like community gardens, and then what are their benefits and how can we get one started if we're keen?
So tell us, do you support community gardens? Do you have one in your neighbourhood? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07, and as we said, the roots of the story today are largely from the eviction notice that has been given to Kebun Kebun Bangsa from the KL Land Administrator. And essentially, this talks about enforcement action being taken that can evict them. And basically, this all comes from, I think, a tussle that has been going on for a while that has to do with what you can do when you start a community garden, what's allowed, and the legalities of that situation, right? Which has opened up this conversation about, on the one hand, the actual benefit of community gardens, of which there are many, but also how to do them in a way that is, I guess you get the kind of community buy-in and do it right.
So the temporary occupancy and license is part of what's being discussed here, because Datuk Muhammad Yasir Yahya, who's the director of the Federal Territories Land and Mines Office, basically said that Kebun Kebun Bangsa had allegedly violated its temporary occupancy license conditions for operating as a nursery. And what that gave them permission to do was cultivate only certain plants, permanent structures cannot be erected. And then you alluded to a sort of longer term tussle, right, Sharmila? And I think that this is where the second part comes in, because he said that the office had also received complaints regarding disturbances, basically circling the farm animals that have kind of come up a number of times in various stories around Kebun Kebun Bangsa, and that has led to issues like noise and odour pollution as well as flies. He did say the office is supportive of urban farm initiatives, but there must be compliance with these conditions for the benefit of all parties.
So on the part of Kebun Kebun, they have said that they are going to reapply for their license and that they wish to continue working with authorities. Now, this is coming, I think, also at an interesting time, because just a couple of weeks ago, the PM, Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob, actually praised Kebun Kebun and in a larger sense talked about the value of community gardens and how they fit in into the government's push for what he called the green agenda. And so this opens up that question, right? Like, how do we do this in a meaningful way, in a sustainable way, while also really getting the community to be a part of it? And it's worth saying that Kebun Kebun Bangsa is, of course, not the only community garden that we see in the Klang Valley. Others that exist include Taman Tun Dr. Ismail Edible Community Garden, the Kebun Community USJ 12, Kebun Community Hartamas. So increasingly, I think they are becoming quite popular.
They are becoming popular. And as we said, I think if you look only at the concept, right, of a community garden, then it's unequivocally a good thing, right? Who doesn't want a space in which you can have, firstly, some greenery, a sense of community, a sense of being able to grow your own food? That there's a lot of benefits, both social as well as environmental, I would imagine, that go hand in hand with the creation of something like a community garden. I think where we run into trouble is if the community, firstly, isn't entirely happy with the way in which it is set up. So that's one thing, because, of course, it's part of the name. It's hugely important. But the other part of it is also accounting for the various ways in which a space like this could evolve, and whether or not something and whether or not the planning is there for it, or even how to plan for it. I think these are all the questions that we're trying to get at, while also saying community gardens in general, in concept, broadly, fantastic.
So the first half of the show, we are going to be talking about the laws involved and how to do this with community buy-in. And then later, we're going to talk about how to start a community garden. Do share your thoughts with us. Do you support community gardens? Do you have one in your neighborhood? You can call 7733290, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Kyu Jia Yeo, Co-Deputy Chair of the Bar Council Environment and Climate Change Committee. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:13. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're talking about community gardens. First, we're going to look at the legalities of community gardens and how to establish one properly. And we'd like to hear from you. Do you support community gardens? Do you have one in your neighborhood? You can call 7733290, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Kyu Jia Yeo, Co-Deputy Chair of the Bar Council Environment and Climate Change Committee. Jia Yeo, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's start with Kebun Kebun Bangsa, which has received an eviction notice from the KL land distributor, and they've instructed them to tear down the structure and vacate the land. And what are the issues involved here?
So, yeah, the eviction notice is from the land administrator of KL. So here is, it purports that from the notice that I've seen on social media, the reason given is that you are in breach of the permission to be on that land. So you're found on state land, the government land, without permission. So that's the premise of this eviction notice. And so if you have no permission to be there and you have no permission to erect structures on it, and you are found to be there and have structures and running some activities, then, of course, strictly speaking, under the National Land Code, which is the law that's being used here, you can be evicted. So that's the narrow and strict legal issues involved here.
And if we broaden that a bit, right, what are the laws that generally surround the cultivation of spaces like community gardens?
All right. And so here is where we have the departure of what the legal framework that we have and the reality of our situation here in 2022, which is we can easily say refer to things like a community garden, and people can understand what the concept entails. But within the legal framework that we have, this is not recognized. So there are no laws in that sense that facilitate groups of people, local communities, forming community gardens. So there is, I'm afraid, no deliberate framework, not in the Kuala Lumpur jurisdiction, for sure. There are some interesting, so like, for example, in Sabah, you have communal title to land, but that's a different discussion altogether. So if we're talking about here in KL, in Peninsula Malaysia, we don't have community concept of relating to land.
So in this case, it's the temporary occupancy license that is at the center of this discussion, right, with Kebun Kebun. Mm-hmm. Could you walk us through what that entails and what the conditions are in applying for one?
So from what I've read from online, so I'm just commenting as a citizen, yeah? So from what I've read online is Kebun Kebun Bangsa are in that space pursuant to a temporary occupancy license. So this must have been given by the state government. And there would have been conditions in the license. So a license is essentially a permission to occupy that land. And so there would be restrictions on what you can do and what you cannot do, and restrictions around what you need to pay, how you can do some things, and what are the extent of that, as well as a tenure time in which that license, that permission would expire. So that's the permission that they've got. And of course, always, as part of the permission, state governments will always have the right to take back that permission that they have given. Yeah? So that's always a structure of a TOL, a temporary occupancy license. So it is by nature very different from a lease that you have, where you are entitled to the land for the entire duration of the lease. So here there is no security of tenure. It can be easily revoked.
So if someone were to start a community garden, right, what are some of the factors they would need to consider in order to make it work and do it well?
So if someone wants to, let's say a group of local communities, neighbours, want to make use of a piece of land, so usually these lands, let's say under the power cables of TNB, right, and you'd like to do something there as a community effort. So, but what we have, as we've just said, is we have a very traditional, very conventional legal framework when it comes to land and how land is governed. So you have to go to whoever owns the land, and then so whatever activity that is being proposed, the idea of a community garden, it has to be done under their auspices. They have to agree to it, and you will have to do it through them in that sense. So that means you have to find out who owns the land, and in this case, it will be the state government. So I'm not sure if the state government for Kebun Kebun Bangsa, they have actually granted some kind of ownership or temporary license to TNB. I'm not sure about those details. But if a hypothetical community garden, and it is a state land, then you definitely have to have the state as part of your community or your organizing committee, and they will have to be in the driver's seat, so to speak.
We have a question from a listener, I think, which is something many people have often wondered. Mrs. Lim wants to know, wondering whether I can plant at the back lane of my house or empty space in my apartment land.
So my answer to you will be, yes, you can. But will you have the legal right to? I'm afraid as a lawyer, the answer is no, you don't. Yeah, I think I'll stop there. So, but as my first answer is, yes, you can, and society needs it. I think we need people to take leadership, and we need people to take ownership of public spaces, as long as they bear in mind and they of the communal spirit of that activity. Right. So you shouldn't fence up an area and treat it as your own, or treat it as an area that is for some of you. So there is an element of stewardship. Yeah. So I think the Kebun Kebun Bangsa example is an excellent one, where they've espoused really fundamental and universal principles, isn't it, in terms of what the community farm is about and what it intends to serve. Yeah, so there's an alignment of those intentions. So I think something like that is definitely positive.
So community is in the name, right? When it comes to community gardens, how important is it to have full community buy-in, or as full as possible?
So full community buy-in is of course, it takes work and it takes alignment, isn't it? So like if you planting vegetables, planting aesthetic plants, so sometimes fruit trees are not as aesthetic to some people. And also then you're in the community, people will have different degrees of understanding as well as tolerance to the things that you usually entail. So, for example, if you have fruit trees, you have more. So instead of a blank, sterile lawn or padang that is just grass, if we are to plant a variety of trees and shrubs, then it will attract its own ecosystem, and that includes snakes, little rodents, your dupai, and other visitors, other constituents of that area. And so it takes education, it takes kind of awareness, about these, the role of snakes, the role of bees and other insects in that. So there is work to be done, but all this is meaningful nonetheless. So how do you get buy-in from everyone? It's a process. I think that's the first thing, and it takes a village as well to to be clear about why they are doing something and to want to include all their neighbors to be part of it, I think. I think if there is that spirit, then I think over time everyone will come around.
So you said community buy-in is a process. I'm curious, particularly because we're talking about multiple people with multiple opinions, what are the mechanisms that are needed to indicate that you put that process in place, that you have that buy-in? What are some ways that we can kind of do this in a systematic manner?
Yeah, so there has to be, I think, an intention of a real clarity of intention, right? That, okay, these are, let's say, the kinds of activity that we agree to do on this land, i.e. we're going to plant, let's say, these types of plants, and these are the reasons, and then we agree on it. And then let's say, do we agree to have some animals involved as well, and do we agree on it? And then what are the conditions, to what extent can we have these things? All right, so that's a process. So so having that articulated very clearly, but also getting the trust, right? So I think if you're asking about what are the process, I think it's always good to start with what is very clear. And in that sense, start simple, be very clear, say what you mean and mean what you say, and then approach the people who would be immediately affected. So immediate neighbors, even before the immediate neighbors, let's start with the landowners. In this case, if it is a communal an area that the state owns, then start with the buy-in of the relevant agency that has the responsibility or authority over that area. So start with them as the core partner. And then you guys, who are you? Do you already have an identity? For example, are you a residence association? Or are you some of the families around this area? So have that identity, clarity about who you are, what you're about, what you hope to do, and then radiate outwards. Then the next step would be getting the immediate neighbors to agree to it. So that means by then you have a very clear plan about what you like to do and what it's for, what are its objectives, and what are their role, and give them a role as well so that they can agree to it. And then as things go, if then they learn something new, for example, they discover, now there are a lot more people visiting and I don't like all these cars being parked near my house, for example, then what is a mechanism in which they can then feedback on what they discover as they come on this journey? And so you get the idea that trust is really important, that there is a sensibility around this, isn't it? And that you would be heard, and that we will figure it out in a really sensible way as we go along. So I think these are some of the design features in terms of how do you go about procuring this buy-in. Procuring is such an ugly word. So getting this buy-in, isn't it? You need to win the buy-in. So this is very far away from the legal. It's very far away from what a legal mechanism would sound like. So we are really on the other spectrum of getting legitimacy from people rather than getting cold hard legitimacy from the black letter of the law. Yeah. So it is. There has to be some awareness of that difference. And a readiness to constantly negotiate and persuade. Yeah,
I think this is a point that we've kind of touched on and then circled. But what value do community gardens bring from an environmental point of view?
Oh, heaps, isn't it? I think from Kebun Kebun Bangsa's example, we can see how an idea like that can actually be manifested and create so much value. There is, of course, the ecosystem diversity that little spot itself brings, the kind of plants, edible produce that it comes from. And then from a social angle, the kind of awareness and the kind of educational opportunities that it provides to people near and far, yeah, from locals all the way up to recently the Prime Minister, finding inspiration from the communal effort. So socially, that is that there is that value, and from a societal angle, it is also very valuable because it represents a civic space that we have. So besides it being a physical space, I think these kinds of spaces are really valuable in that we can viscerally and literally see people from different walks of life coming together and contributing what they have into making something beautiful, and it, that's hard to come by, isn't it? It brings a lot. It's not just in the environmental or climate change impact or positive points. It is a lot more. I think it embodies a lot of what the Sustainable Development Goals talk about, I think it allows for opportunity for us to, or inspiration for us to think about more ambitious collaboration within our society. And if we have learned anything from the COVID pandemic and economic crisis that has followed, is this is Kebun Kebun Bangsa and folks who do projects like these, they are onto something, because therein lies the solution. Therein lies the kind of antidote for our community resilience. Yeah, and it's only within a society and a community that is resilient that you can have economic resilience. And of course, there are other things like food security as well. Yeah, and literally translates into a safer community. So its impacts, its benefits, I think, are profound, and we are still continuing to learn from it, I think. So, yeah, it's profoundly important. So in that sense, it is with a lot of sadness that our government machinery is coming, going about responding to this situation in this way. And this is extremely unfortunate that we are behaving like robots and executing the black letter of the law in total forgetfulness about the sustainable development goals that our government has long ago already committed to. So I think decision makers and public administrators, they really need to check back on their workshops and their conferences and their policy documents about all these good things, because they are there, and they need to do the work of the last mile work of translating those wonderful things for the future generation into their SOP and their workflows today, and reconsider this imminent threat of eviction here.
Jiayo, thank you for speaking with us today. That was Q Jiayo, Co-Deputy Chair of the Bar Council Environment and Climate Change Committee, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It's 6:39. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're talking about community gardens, how to establish them and how to establish them in a sustainable way. So we'd like to hear from you. Do you support community gardens? Do you have one in your neighborhood? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Before we get to our next guest, I think we have time for some messages, which are covering, I would say, really both sides of the issue, or many sides of the issue.
So let's start with Rosmawati, who says, we had a nice community garden in Bukit Jelutong, which people from near and far came to cycle, walk or run. With time and maybe pressure to make money, the developer began building apartment complexes, converting patches of green into concrete jungle. The only big field we have is, which was a private football field that belongs to the developer's football club, is off limits to the residents. Now, these apartments cost as much as my landed house. Although the property price is ridiculously high, people still bought them as investments. investments, there is no incentive to keep a community garden then, as a luxury apartment can cost as much as ₱1 million.
Those are actually great points. And it's also why I do think that as much as community involvement is important, that this is something that requires a larger sort of policy approach, and as well as an incentive is actually a great way. I would like to see incentives rolled out from the government to keep land for users of like community gardens.
So I think there's a difference here between execution and then preservation. And that push and pull is what we're seeing here, right? Because they existed, but the issue with preserving them was that commercial pressures just meant it's not possible. And I think that this is the kind of conflict that we see very often when it comes to any green space within such a crowded and expensive urban centre.
Coming at it from the opposite side of the argument is me, who says, let me ask residents, how would you like if your neighbour just took over shared public spaces and turned it into their own garden? Or better still, it creeps into your area. No, no, no. And me, you know, I understand those concerns. We've all seen those, people in the neighbourhood who treat public spaces like it's their personal space. But I do encourage you, if you missed it, to go back and listen to our guest earlier, who talked a lot about what actual community buy-in looks like, how you can do it in a way that allows everyone to weigh in and arrive at some ground rules, essentially. And I thought that was very useful as a way to address exactly this.
I just wanted to add on that, in case it's not clear, Sharmila was not talking to herself. Me is a guest, or rather me is a listener who wrote in, because you said that with like tremendous energy. And I thought, okay, I'm not sure if that's going to be clear.
Keep those thoughts coming. Do you support community gardens? Do you have one in your neighborhood? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we're going to get into the question of how to set up a community garden. And for that, we're joined by Shaolin Lau, co-founder of Eats, Shoots and Roots. They're a social enterprise that focuses on helping communities grow their own food. Shaolin, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Put simply, what would your argument or thesis statement be for why community gardens are important?
Yeah, I mean, I think community gardens are generally, they are a bit harder to start because you require the buy-in from so many different people, right? But I think they are really a great place for neighbors to come together, or just generally people from the community or even outside the community together. And it really brings people of all colors, backgrounds together, because you can talk about plants without having to talk about politics in some ways. So it's really a great space to allow social togetherness to happen. That's what I feel.
We're going to explore that in a bit more detail later, but specifically, why is it important for younger people or for, I mean children actually, to have exposure to community gardens?
Okay, I mean, for example, me growing up in PJ, my story is that having grown up in a suburban area, I was never really exposed to nature. I never really had an inkling about the environment until 10 years ago when my friend spoke to me about her site, her permaculture site, and that was my introduction into nature. And so I feel like actually if kids these days, if they get an early start or some exposure to community gardens, at least they understand a bit more about nature, how it works. And in the long run, they can really make good decisions about when it comes to environmental choices, even coming to zero waste policies, or like what kind of vehicles to use. I mean, they can really make a lot of difference in the world, I think, if they already have that exposure from a young age and have that connection with nature from the start.
So there are a lot of factors to unpack here, including the environmental aspect, as you've touched on, and also why being self-sufficient when it comes to food is increasingly important. Are people more interested than ever in growing their own food? And what do you think is driving that?
So, I mean, we've been around for 10 years, right? And when we started, we had this idea that we wanted to have a self-sufficient lifestyle. We would really grow our own food. But maybe that was coming in from a bit of a naive point of view. I mean, 10 years have passed. We've gone through so much and we've dealt with so many different communities. And the idea of living self-sufficiently through a community garden is quite unlikely, to be frank, and to be realistic. But really, it's the idea that a community garden can bring different people together. And the self-sufficiency actually comes from supporting other people outside of the community garden aspect, like your local farmers, your local shops that supply local vegetables. So that's the kind of connection that is necessary. Having community gardens To grow all your own food, it's just not enough space, not enough time. People don't really have that much time to commit to work and then garden and then be a farmer at the same time, because farming is a full commitment. It's easy in some ways, but in some ways you also have to take care of life plants. They're like pets. If you leave them alone, they might go wild. So that aspect of community gardening is quite challenging. But I think the idea of community gardening still brings people together and, you know, connects us to other people outside of this space.
So what are some of the ways in which you've seen those stronger community ties get fostered?
Yeah, so I mean, different communities have different experiences. Sometimes there are communities that are in the first year, they're so excited. And then in the second year, there's like two people left and two like lonely uncles just doing all the gardening itself. But there are some really good examples where a few people came together very slowly. They just basically started planting stuff in their community garden or the space around their community. And bit by bit, they added on small patches. So they grew pretty slowly, but they get buy-in bit by bit. They didn't have like big grand plans and they didn't like overtake a whole space from the beginning. And I think that's a good way to do it, like do it small and then get buy-in from community bit by bit, because then people are not so scared. They don't feel like, oh, my space is being taken over. And also when it's small, it's easier to manage. And you're not destroying a place if you, let's say, cut all these trees just to plant vegetables and all that, and then it doesn't work out. So starting small so far has been a really good way to do it.
So when it comes to actually creating a community garden, right, and in terms of wanting to strengthen that social bond of it all, what are some elements that can be built in to create that involvement, to create that sense of ownership?
So, for example, I mean, getting everyone to plan together in the first place is important, so that everyone's involved in the planning process. They don't feel as if they just suddenly like being thrown this grand idea and they have to take on so much. So planning in the beginning and then assigning roles to see who can commit how much time realistically and who's in charge of what, and nobody's like overstepping another person's boundaries. So allocating those roles is really like setting up a little family or a little company and making that work. So I think assigning roles from the beginning is important, and just moving on from there. And, you know, sometimes also you have to plan who takes over in succession planning. If something happens, like somebody doesn't have the time anymore, who can take over? That's also, yeah, just as important. Kind of like running a little NGO.
We're speaking with Shaolin Lau, who is the co-founder of Eat Shoots and Roots, about how to set up your own community garden. Do keep your thoughts coming. Do you support the idea? Do you have one in your neighborhood? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll continue our conversation with Shaolin after this, so keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It's 6:50. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're discussing how to set up a community garden with Shaolin Lau, co-founder of Eat Shoots and Roots. Do keep sending your thoughts our way. Do you support community gardens? Do you have one in your neighborhood? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. So, Shaolin, you've been doing this for 10 years, as you said. How have you seen the conversation around what community gardens or farming can be change in that time?
Like I mentioned earlier, I mean, people used to think that being a community garden, they can supply their community with vegetables just from the garden. So that is obviously not possible because of the space. And now it's kind of evolved into having a space for people to come together. A lot of developers are also taking this on, where when they develop a building or a residential area, they would take into consideration a community garden area. And that's how they bring us in. And so then we help them plan the space and to make sure that it is good for community to use later on when they start to move in.
Okay, so to get down to brass tacks, for those who are interested in getting started, who are listening and who think this is something I want to do, what advice would you have on building a community garden and getting started?
I mean, realistically, I think if a few people from the neighborhood get together, The sort of maybe in a bit more gangster way is to just start planting around your neighborhood. Like if you see a small patch, maybe you can break it up lightly lah and just start planting things. Because really in public spaces, nobody really knows what plants are growing on. I mean, nobody really can identify a lot of plants anyway. So I think if you really have the interest, just try planting out on a small patch first. You don't have to take over the whole taman. And maybe from there, if you're really going serious, if there's like 5 to 10 people, then maybe start approaching the people surrounding the taman to say, okay, we're planning to do this. Can we use like maybe a couple of planter beds, and can we start that up? And would you be okay with that? Just to check lah. But so far, I mean, I've seen a lot of neighborhoods that have rogue patches maintained by really dedicated uncles and aunties who tend to their gardens. And usually there isn't any issue lah. The ones that are small size and around the fringes of the taman. I think the ones that have been coming out in the news and all that is usually when it's larger spaces where it's more visible and people feel a bit more, I don't know, what's the word, threatened by the space takeover.
What kind of plants are great for someone who's just starting up?
For people who are just starting out, I always recommend kangkong is the diehard plant. But what we like to promote are a lot of local vegetables, a lot of local perennials. And we've actually listed them down on a website called sayurinthecity.com. And these vegetables are not usually your veggies that you find in your supermarket, like bok choy and kai lan, because those are a bit require a bit more commitment. We like to promote perennial vegetables such as your sweet potato leaf, your Brazilian spinach, your Suriname spinach, terong pipit, things that if you plant once, they can do very well on their own and they can grow pretty much for more than 2 years with less care than your typical vegetables from the supermarket. So yeah, a lot of local ulams, down salom, Vietnamese mint, Indian borage. Yeah, very interesting ones to find. But yeah, check out our website, sayurinthecity.com. We've had it for a few years and it's usually a pretty good resource for people to get started.
I love that name. I just wanted to say that I adore that name. All right. So considering the kinds of vegetables and plants we're talking about, how much does it actually cost to start a community garden? I mean, should I just be marching out there with like cuttings?
So if your community resources, if your community has like enough soil, enough budget, and sometimes people in the neighborhood will have excess resources. Sometimes people have like extra pots, extra soil that they're willing to contribute to the community garden. Then you can start off with next to nothing lah, because then your planting materials you can get from your neighbors and it doesn't cost much. Because in terms of plants, for those who don't know, you can actually just take cuttings, you cut them from existing plants and you just stick them in the soil and then ta-da, those would technically be new plants again. But realistically, also if you're wanting to start with a bigger group and you want to start like proper beds and stuff, I would say a good budget to have would be maybe around 2,000 to 5,000 ringgit. And this actually covers things like the planter bed, a bit of soil and fertilizer, which is actually very important, your compost, your pest repellents. Sometimes when you start planting, you don't realize what kind of pests there are until your veggies grow and then suddenly you attract all sorts of different kinds of pests. So pest repellents as well. And some things you need to accommodate for, like structures. And these structures are like trellises for things to creep on. And sometimes if you want to have a harvest party after that, maybe you want to tontong some budget so you can add a bit of ingredients, cook and have a little party at the end of the harvest session. So at least you have a small budget lah to work with.
What are some of the more common challenges you've encountered in setting up community gardens? What should people anticipate?
The biggest one is maintenance and the commitment that people can have. I think, like I said before, also people start very excitedly and by the end of a year, usually there's a few core people that are left. But this is the reality of it, and it's okay as long as the core folks don't feel burnt out and they can keep going and they find it meaningful to still continue gardening, that's okay. But that's mainly the biggest challenge. But if there is succession planning involved, if there is a realistic separation of time, if also the people who are gardening can get enough support, like let's say they need financial support, if the rest of the community can help contribute in finances to buy, let's say, the fertilizers and stuff like that to help out, then I think it would work okay.
So in general, you mentioned SIO in the city, but what are some other resources you'd recommend for people to get more information or to get support? Are there groups, maybe things like that?
I think for us, we've also been involved with a few community gardens in PJ, and they have sought out the help of their MBPJ counselors, actually. So there are a few spots in PJ. There's one in SS25A, there's in SS4, and they've actually reached out to their counselor. So one of them called John Leong, and he has helped them to arrange workshops and connect them with us also to help them kickstart their gardens, provide different seeds. That's one. Other than that, I think you can also reach out to government bodies like MARDI, the Department of Agriculture. Sometimes they have programs to help community gardens start up, and they would actually provide free fertilizers, free soil, free seeds. So that those are a few bodies that they can look up to.
Shaolin, thanks for speaking with us today.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me.
That was Shaolin Lau, co-founder of Eats, Shoots and Roots, speaking to us about how we can set up a community garden and essentially what we need to know, what challenges we can anticipate. Do keep your thoughts coming. Do you support community gardens? Do you have one in your neighborhood? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're getting plenty of thoughts already. Largely, I want to say, on for the idea, although pointing out certain challenges when it comes to how to establish. So we'd like to hear from you, your own experiences. What were some of the issues that came up? Keep those thoughts coming and we'll get to them after this. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.